Councilman Hollins.
20 minutes.
Yeah. Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Street.
Yeah.
This is mine. Where is it? What development?
I'm Councilwoman Diller, and thanks to Nakai Taylor for being willing to take the minutes today. May we have an approval of the minutes of March 27th?
Motion to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
What the hell is he doing over there?
I don't know. Who's this?
Okay, first up, ordinance 12-043. We have discussed this ordinance in the past. It is to provide funds to the senior home repair program. As you can see, the details, we've been joined by Council President Kovac. As you can see in the details, we have the senior minor home repair has 210 on the waiting list, and so these funds will be very helpful in reducing the waiting list. Remember, in the past, we've only been able to do 40 to 50 houses per year. Any questions?
This is the money.
Yes.
This is the money from
the sheriff's. Yes, this is the money from the sheriff's office, as you can see it noted on the explanation in the bill. No further questions?
No, I'm just making sure that I remember the way.
Yes.
It's really great to see all the work that went to ferret out the actual source of these funds from the sheriff's office to our county auditor and all the folks to make it available so we can really really take a big huge bite out of this the backlog in this very great program, our senior home repair program. How are we going to resolve the entire backlog, do you feel? Or
no, I don't think so. I think because of the proposals that have come forward, I don't think we're going to be able to take care of the entire backlog, but I think we will begin to be able to help more people than we have been in the past. Councilman Hollins, do you have a
I would agree.
Comment? Okay. All right. Any further questions?
Did you, Mr. Henry, have anything to say on that?
Yeah, thank you, Council President Kovac. Just wanted to give kind of an overview of how we see the implementation of these new funds will go for this program, and Council bear with me for a few minutes. For implementation of our senior minor home repair program, some changes we're going to propose how we can deal with these new funds. First of all, I have to say on behalf of my department, and also obviously the seniors will be assisted with these funds, I'd like to thank the county executive, and I'd like to thank the members of Council for proposing to use these one-time funds for this program. In partnership with the Senior Minor Home Repair Program, the plan is to use these funds to create a more general program that will be entitled the Senior Home Repair Program, which would offer up to a $7,500 deferred loan to seniors ages 60 or older for modifications and rehab to their homes. Some of the guidelines are the following. As stated, these funds will be offered in conjunction with the Senior Minor Home Repair Grant Program. Newcastle County Housing Rehab staff would work from the current Senior Minor Home Repair waiting list. Actually, currently as of today, there are 214 seniors on the list. As a first step, a rehab specialist will meet with the homeowner and rehab needs will be identified. The first funding source will be the $2,500 federally funded grant. It'll be maintained as a grant. In most homeowner rehab cases, additional work beyond the $2,500 is needed. And through these funds, seniors will be offered up to $7,500 in a deferred loan to address other rehab needs. Our analysis from my rehab staff shows that with approximately 10,000 home improvements, a home can be made livable for the homeowner for a long-term duration. All these loans will be offered at 0% deferred that will be paid back upon the sale or transfer, rental, refinance when no longer owner-occupied. This allows the program to become revolving in hopes to maximize the number of seniors assisted. Seniors would still need to meet the income guidelines as per federal regulations of being at or below 80% of area median income. All housing rehab work and loan processing would need to meet the housing rehab and loan underwriting guidelines as defined in the federally funded homeowner loan program. We anticipate 40 to 50 loans the first year. I think it's actually a bigger number than that. And our projected start date being May 15th. This is gonna take a few years, obviously, to get through the list. But what we found historically, and Carrie can speak more to this, it usually takes more than $2,500 to assist with some of these rehabs. You know, so the range of $2,500 to $10,000, we feel we can tackle a lot of these needs. Carrie, you want to add anything that I may have missed?
No.
Okay. Any questions on what I've presented?
I'd like to recognize Councilman Weiner. Councilman Retta?
Thank you. Marcus, on some of the programs, I mean, the repairs that you had, is there a limitation on what you do, or is there, or could we, you know, get some type of idea? Because a lot of times people ask, you know, they would have to have this done or have that done. And you know, I'm not really that sure on, I know some of the projects that they can do, but all the projects, I mean, that could be done.
Give them kind of a scope of work of what you typically do.
Sure. We, Carrie Casey with Department of Community Services, we have four rehab loan, homeowner rehab products currently. We have the senior minor home repair, which is the $2,500 grant. We have the $5,000 emergency program. We have the homeowner incentive program loan, which is up to $20,000 for larger ticket items. And then we have the major rehab, which is up to $55,000. And I'm joined here with Lexi Driscoll, who's our acting administrator of our homeowner rehab programs. And her staff, we really look, this is such a blessing for us to have these funds, and we want to maximize them, revolve them, but really help that senior stay stably housed in good housing for a long period of time. So we felt that by offering this, first giving a little bit of a grant, which is good, a senior gets a little nervous about, you know, taking on that loan and then making it a deferred loan, then we're able to solve not only just a couple windows and a door, all the windows, some weatherization, maybe a new roof, you know, like a $5,000 ticket item, or a heating system. So we're able to do, you know, a couple of things like a weatherization window door, and then we're also able to do a larger ticket item. And when looking at the list that we have, that really will cover and help an individual. We didn't want to go too far out because then we wouldn't be able to help as many people.
Speaking of going out, I know they do a lot within the home itself. Is there anything in there like for concrete, like bad concrete, like, because that would come under the homeowner's insurance policy that they really can't afford to take care of that. They would try and take care of their house comparably to a liability.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Lexi Driscoll. We can go outside the house if we're working in the home. We use federal guidelines for all of our projects. If it's something that creates a trip or safety hazard,
right,
we can address it.
That's what I'm referring to.
We have concrete driveways where concrete's broken up, and a homeowner, maybe with a walker, gets out of their car and they can't really make it to the door because the driveway's broken, the steps are bad, and the sidewalk's not good. That we can do. We couldn't go in and just do exterior improvements, but that we can certainly address.
So it would come under the purview of doing work in the house to where they can extend it outside?
Right. Only for certain things, and that would be one of them. We can't do any kind of landscaping, nothing of a cosmetic luxury nature.
Nothing like that. I was just thinking of something on a liability end for the customer.
Yes.
I'd like to recognize Councilman Sheldon. Any further questions of Mr. Henry and his staff? Mr. Henry, the floor is yours for updates.
Thank you. I'll start with the Bear Library. I'm pleased to say as about a month ago, all the interior demo work has been completed at Bear. Also, we've just gotten fire marshal approval for the project to move forward. Our project as it stands right now does remain on schedule to reopen in late September, early October of this year. Councilman, he's not here, but oh, there you go. We are trying to confirm with the fire marshal, because that's the first step, to have that as a polling place open for service. We should confirm that, I would imagine, before the next meeting. So we are working with that deal to make sure, even if it's not finished, to be able to have that access to polling place, because that's very important on this. Any other questions on Bear? I'll kind of claim on these are brief. Okay. For Claymont, we're also happy to report that we've gotten our construction access permit from DelDOT. Those issues have been addressed. Site work has officially begun at the Claymont site. Also, we have sediment stormwater plans have been approved and record plan has been recorded. So we're moving forward on Claymont. We're extremely excited about that. We do still remain on schedule for June of 2013 to reopen Claymont. June 30th, I'll save that. Any questions on that? Yes.
Sure, Councilman.
Thank you. The operation of the, I know you've been active in talking with the Claymont Community Center about the operation of the old library until the new library. Could you, I guess we're handling that, that's being dealt with. That's
we did a lease extension with the Claymont Community Center. That'll take us well through till the library is completed for the date. And we've, you know, it's important, we see the importance, putting aside just the library and our lease, we see the importance of that community center. We see the importance of the community. And so our goal is to meet with the representatives and identify if there's tenants that could be possibly put in the community center to work with our operations, because we see the value in that community. I know Councilman Cardi, we talked about that. So we don't make sure that remains a viable place for the community.
Great, thank you.
I'll go to something fun, Brian. This is our Geek the Library campaign. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the billboards in and around town for that. I think it's a great campaign, and just a reminder, the Newcastle County has established a countywide committee to assist with participating in the national Geek the Library campaign.
Ooh, we're all getting laptops.
The purpose of the Geek the Library campaign is to raise awareness for public libraries. Funding for this campaign is provided through the National Library Cooperative, OCLC, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and through grants obtained by the Delaware Division of Libraries. Now, you all are each getting a t-shirt and some other materials as part of this campaign.
Don't forget your gift log before you leave tonight.
Okay, free.
It's under $50.
It doesn't matter, trust me.
The Geek campaign asks the question, like, what do you geek? In other words, what are you passionate about? The statement of the campaign is, whatever you geek, the library supports you. The library encourages your passion, geek, by providing you internet access, knowledgeable librarians, and local programs in your community. For many, the library is not just a luxury, it's a necessity.
Thank you.
Since the campaign was first announced, the department has been busy obtaining all the free geek merchandise. We can and plan to see the campaign with staff, county state officials, the library advisory board, and library friends group. In addition, there are several geek billboards, as I mentioned, in Newcastle County, along with many of the marketing and advertising measures, such as t-shirts and print ads in the local newspapers. And I can answer any questions. I'm more excited about this initiative. It's definitely raised awareness. I know we have library staff across the state that actually went to the General Assembly and handed out t-shirts.
If I'd known that, I'd have bought you a shirt 3 months ago.
Any further questions on the Geek the Library campaign? All right, Mr. Henry, thank you.
The Garfield Park Computer Lab ribbon cutting ceremony is planned for May 3rd at 3 p.m. at the Garfield Park Lending Library. We are excited to officially open this public computer lab, which will be a valuable resource to residents of the Garfield Park area and Route 913 corridor. To date, we'll be joined by the county executive, Councilman Street, thank you, Councilman Street, and the deputy secretary of state, among others. And we hope all members of council are able to join us for this special event. And it's important that I mention, this does segue directly into our 913 needs assessment, part of this. As you all remember, the library master plan calls for a library needs assessment for the 913 corridor. The department has contracted with consultants Himmel and Wilson to complete the needs assessment and is seeking matching funds from the state, which we expect to secure. The 913 needs assessment stakeholders meeting will be right after the ribbon cutting ceremony at Garfield Park Library. We've invited community stakeholders to attend the meeting, and I hope all interested parties are invited to attend. Any questions on that? Okay. I'll go into this.
All right. Okay.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to brief council on the upcoming year's activities for the county's HUD action plan and to review funding recommendations for FY13 Community Development Block Grant Program, Home Program, and Emergency Solutions Grant Program. I'm also going to touch briefly on the substantial amendment for this year's annual plan for the mid-year allocation of Emergency Solutions Grant Program funds. As way of background, in conjunction with the CDBG Home Program and Emergency Solutions Grant Program, Newcastle County is required, and I have to stress that, required by law, to prepare each year an action plan to notify citizens and HUD of planned funded activities for the upcoming program year. The action plan is due to HUD annually by May 15th. The action plan serves as the county's application for CDBG home and ESG funding. In preparation of the one-year action plan to HUD, there are priorities that must guide the funding allocation process. This is federally regulated and is mandated in terms we follow these directives. First, in developing the plan, Newcastle County must take into account the HUD overall arching goals of increasing home ownership, promoting decent, affordable housing, ensuring equal opportunities in housing, and strengthening communities. Newcastle County must also take into account, when developing the one-year action plan, the county's housing priorities developed through the five-year consolidated planning process. The county's five-year consolidated plan was developed and approved by HUD in 2010. There were six housing priorities outlined in the five-year plan, which have specific goals and performance measures tied to them. Non-housing goals were also developed to support programs that provide public social services to county residents. Newcastle County reports on these measures annually in the annual performance report to HUD. As required by HUD, the action plan must also focus primarily on identifying needs and adopting strategies to address low and moderate income persons and households. Per HUD, Newcastle County must also address the needs of persons with special needs, such as the elderly, persons with disabilities, homeless persons, and families and persons living with HIV and AIDS. This is the schedule for submittal of the action plan to HUD and the process undertaken each year. Grants for FY13 funding were due on December 20th, 2011. Following the HUD-approved standard operating procedure, committees were formed to review and rate the grant applications. Committee members included the Department of Community Service staff, the Executive Office, and a large contingent of volunteers. Committee members spent 1 month reviewing and rating the applications, with a group recommendation meeting to discuss and rate the applications. The recommendations are reviewed with the County Executive and then included in the draft annual plan. The spring plan was available for comment on April 2nd, 2012. The plan is on our website, and the notice of the plan's availability was published in the News Journal and the Spanish language publication Hoy en Delaware. Our public meeting was last week on April 16th, 2012. Though attendance was not large, discussion was substantive. The close of the comment period is May 4th, 2012, with the plan due to HUD by May 15th, 2012. And this is the county's HUD allocation for FY13. As many of you know, over the last 4 months, our HUD-funded programs faced large funding reductions. The final federal budget, which is the county's fiscal year 13 budget, was finalized November 2011. The CDBG budget was reduced by 3%, reduced by 36%, and there was a substantial increase in ESG funds due to the ESG program being revised by HUD. We also have estimated our program income for FY13 from our CDBG in home-funded loans for rehab and down payment and settlement assistance, and the projected carry-forward funds available to be allocated for FY13. The non-federal funding sources include two revolving loan pools from county down payment and settlement assistance programs. Even with substantial reductions in federal grant funds, I have to commend my staff for looking at ways to maximize the funds awarded to worthy projects. And I'd like to just recognize him right now, Vince Garlick, who's our home administrator, Nicole Waters, our program analyst, Carrie Casey, and Lexi. I know Lexi helps a lot in this too. And Brian. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
As an example, we reallocated $300,000 last year's home funds to award to this year. And because of this, we were able to award approximately the same amount of grants this year as we did last year. Unfortunately, without increasing our federal funds for next year, we'll have substantially less funding to award next year, and that's a big concern. We fund a lot of worthy projects this year. The home fund specifically, which is the main source of gap leverage financing for these projects, is just not going to be there. So we'll deal with that as it comes forward. Okay. The first housing priority is to expand the supply of housing for affordable homeownership. The goal tied to this priority is to increase the supply of decent, affordable, and accessible for-sale housing opportunities available to the county's lowest income households through coordination with area CHOTOs, nonprofits, and for-profit agencies and private developers. Each year, Newcastle County hopes to produce approximately 4 to 5 affordable and accessible homeownership housing units. For this priority, Newcastle County plans to fund 1 nonprofit with home CHOTO funds for the continued homeownership efforts in the community of Edgemoor. The second housing priority is housing rehab for low and moderate income homeowners. The goal is to support families and individuals who already own their homes, but due to economic hardship or excessive cost burden, are not able to make repairs necessary for critical upkeep and value retention. Approximately 200 units per year will be rehabbed through our in-house homeowner rehab programs. These include the Homeowner Rehab Direct Loan Program, the Homeowner Incentive Program, the Emergency Home Repair, and what we talked about earlier, the Senior Minor Home Repair Program, which we're revising to a certain extent. You see the dollar figures. The goal for Housing Priority 3 is to facilitate increased homeownership opportunities for low to moderate income families and individuals in Newcastle County, and to expand options available to these groups. We anticipate completing 150 settlements per year through the variety of down payment and settlement assistance programs we offer. This includes our DPS, which is our loan program, which is community development block grant funded up to about $5,000 loan, our HIP program, home buyer incentive program, which is deferred loan up to 3.5% of purchase price in target census tracts, and our Section 8 homeownership DPS grant program. We will also continue to offer the vacant home buyer assistance program using funds from the sale of NSP properties. The goal of Housing Priority 4 is to expand the availability of rental housing stock for low to moderate income households. Newcastle County accomplished this by leveraging home funds with larger scale projects, either funded with private equity or through the DSHA Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. Examples of projects for FY13 funds include 2 projects for senior housing in Claymont, if I say this right, B'nai B'rith, and the City of Wilmington Sacred Heart Village 2, and a multi-family rental housing through Lancaster Court Apartment Complex. Housing priority number 5 is to assist homeless populations with the goal of providing stability and opportunity to the county's homeless populations through work with nonprofit organizations and other public agencies. Newcastle County accomplishes this task by providing operational support for emergency shelter and transitional housing to 6 or more agencies annually. This year, we propose funding 8 shelters with operational support and 1 agency, the Homeless Planning Council, for the administrative support they provide to the state to manage the statewide database for homeless assistance, HMIS. That's what it's called. Housing Priority 6 is to support housing for people with disabilities with the goal of supporting independent living housing options for persons with disabilities. The Architectural Accessibility Program administered by the county provides grants for handicap accessible ramps for owner-occupied homes. About 8 to 10 ramps and other improvements are completed in the course of 1 year. Additionally, home funds will be used to make accessible a group home for people with physical disabilities located in North Wilmington. Owing to the diverse nature of the residents of Newcastle County, 2 non-housing goals focused on community development will develop through the 5-year consolidated planning process. The first goal is to strengthen communities. As you can see from this example of funded grantees, programs funded will provide a diverse range of services, from summer camp scholarships to an after-school teen center to a culinary job skills training course to services for victims of domestic violence. The second non-housing goal is to promote grassroots, faith-based, and community-based organizations. The objective here is to support organizations that work to provide comprehensive housing and community development services to help bridge gaps in services to help maximize resources for better program delivery and grassroots efforts. Programs funded include foreclosure counseling, fair housing training, emergency housing assistance, and neighborhood cleanups. Lastly, Newcastle County must prioritize programs for non-homeless special needs persons. Programs funded in this eligible activity area include senior supportive services, a summer camp for disabled children, and mental health services for the uninsured. As you may know, Newcastle County is the city of Newark's community development block grant allocation. Newark submitted a budget which includes homeowner rehab, senior housing grants, and public facility and service projects, including some street improvements, and a job training program for the city's youth. Community development block grants has a 20% administrative cap, and the home program has a 10% administrative cap. This pays for administrative work by county staff, and all their expenses include training, materials, indirect costs, and also administrative costs for four of our sub-grantees. I would also like to briefly discuss the substantial amendment we are submitting to HUD by May 15th for the current year action plan for the newly revised Emergency Solutions Grant Program. In January of this year, HUD released guidance on the revised ESG program, and with the guidance, jurisdictions that receive ESG funds were allocated a mid-year allocation of ESG funds. To receive the funds, the county must submit a substantial amendment to HUD by May 15th, outlining the plan to how the mid-year allocation will be used. The main change with the ESG is that the additional must be used for homeless prevention and rapid rehousing programs. The amount of the mid-year allocation is $58,560. In working with the Homeless Planning Council, that is also the statewide coordinator for the continuum of care, and the other jurisdictions that receive ESG funds, being the City of Wilmington and Delaware State Housing Authority, Newcastle County plans to combine the mid-year allocation and the additional funding available for FY13 for rapid rehousing services. HUD strongly recommends jurisdictions to use the extra funding for rapid rehousing programs. Rapid rehousing is an emerging national best practice to help families quickly move out of homelessness and into permanent housing. The rapid rehousing strategies can include rental assistance, flexible funding for security, utility, etc., and intensive case management. Once HUD approves the plan, Newcastle County will issue an RFP for eligible nonprofits and faith-based organizations to provide these services. DSHA and the City of Wilmington are planning to issue a similar RFP for the same activity. Over the next few months, my staff will be working in partnership with DSHA, the City of Wilmington, and the Homeless Planning Council on the program's parameters. Thank you for the opportunity you and your constituents have until May 4th to submit public comments for the plan and the ESG substantial amendment. The draft plan and the draft substantial amendment are available on the department's housing page. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hendrick? Mr. Street.
I said it last year, nobody listened. Some of the council members were opposed. But I still don't like the fact that the administration makes a decision on this amount of funding in isolation as to who gets what. To the extent you want to say that, I don't want to bring it before council because that'll make it political. Well, a whole lot of that's political, and those of us who know politics know it is. But I'm not going to wait for next year to deal with that aspect of it. But what I really don't like is you listed agencies, you didn't say who gets what. That's a concern. I think we need to see that. My major question is, with specificity, what organizations are funded specifically to house the homeless?
Carrie Casey with the Department of Community Services. We have the draft plan is actually on our website, and we'd be happy to provide the plan to every member of council. We can email it, you know, later today. And it has specific grant awards for each jurisdiction, for each nonprofit, and what they're what they'll be receiving in specific amount of funding. Usually, this is it's a broader brush picture. But of course, as you said, the devils are in the details, and we can get you a copy of that draft plan to see it. In terms of programs that are specifically helping going to shelter operations, it's those shelters listed under the Emergency Solutions Grant Program for emergency shelter. There are 8 of them. And additionally, because of some new ESG regulations, we did provide $5,000 in some CDBG funds for some transitional shelters out of the CDBG budget. And I don't have them. I know one STEM, but I can get you those specifics. There were some requirements regarding the new APSD program funding transitional shelters. So we know the importance of transitional shelters, so the committee made the recommendation to fund out of CDBG. So I can get you a list, but if the emergency solutions grant, which is on slide, actually, and I have a copy of that, I can give it to you, is on slide 11. There are eight shelters that are getting direct operations that house the homeless. But there are a few extra. They're just in our CDBG allocation, and I can get you those specifics with what I send to the action plan, if that works.
Is that page up here?
11 is slide 11. Can I have a copy? Here's
about eight back.
Can you?
One more.
You're right.
I'd like to also say that in my time being with the department during this process, we always strive to be as transparent with this process for these awards. And that's why I think there's a track record, I believe, last year in our meeting with council to tell you what's going on in terms of budget reductions, how we allocate these things. But in the presentation, I think we went into great detail in terms of the committee process, how we make those decisions, how we deliberate over those decisions, most importantly. And I have to give special recognition to staff because it's been so difficult this year with these funding reductions. But the fact was we funded over 50 nonprofits and their programming at levels we typically had done in years past. The challenge is that we're not going to be able to sustain that in the coming years. And so I want to commend staff in the process for doing what we can do right now. And that's all.
Mr. Cardi?
Yeah, I guess it's slide... six, the estimated funding sources, and you know, just going to your point, and trying to understand the vagaries of the federal budgeting process. When will they actually produce a budget? These are estimated.
This is actual.
The HUD allocations are what we're getting. We have estimated program income, what we anticipate getting for 13, and then estimated carry forward that what we need. The one piece of good news with last year's budget was that our budget was pretty much finalized in November for July. So we've been able to really plan and project. This is really, you know, unless we collect a lot more program income, which we hope we do, this is really what our picture looks like beginning July 1.
You're certain of this?
We are.
What about the Congress in the summer and what they're going to do? So the HUD appropriation is locked in?
Yes.
Despite what goes on in Washington?
What they discussed for this year right now, it would actually impact us July 1, 2013.
Yes.
I don't think they can go back on what they
said. Council McCarty makes a good point, and it's a concern of ours because they have shown a propensity to go, you know, retroactively back and look at some of their funding. I think we're 99% sure about this, but in the future that's an issue. I mean, I know in Section 8 administration, for example, we're funded in different cycles, and they make policy decisions midstream that could affect, you know, how we forecast our budget allocation on a given year. So that's why I have such good staff. That's why we do a good job of forecasting. You know, just on examples of setting a payment standard of how much subsidy we actually give out per unit and understanding the nuance of that. I mean, that's credit to my staff.
One follow-up question. So for the two major funding categories, CDBG and home, what?
Notice a lot of that is carried forward.
Okay.
That's important to distinguish, meaning that's from last year. I don't have it next year. Okay,
right.
So that's why we're able to kind of, you know, help a lot of folks this time. Next year, different story, unfortunately.
But those figures for the block grant program and home that take effect this July, what kind of cuts do they reflect from previous federal HUD appropriations? just trying to get a sense of the magnitude of the cut.
This is Carrie Casey with Department of Community Services. And how they compare to last year?
Yes.
Okay. CDBG is a reduction of only 3%, which is really good news for us. Home, unfortunately, is a reduction of 36%. And if you recall from last year, we were reduced 12%. So it's almost a 50% reduction in home funds. ESG, we usually get only 100,000. We got 185. So that's great. That's another piece of good news. But we have to. We're developing a new program to be able to use those funds. But so, some good news and bad news in there.
And understand, remember, it wasn't just the reductions they proposed. They talked about limiting administrative cap and how much we could actually spend on administration. That was the issue. That was a big issue, just as much as the funding reductions. Mm-hmm. So we have our grant awards, but you know we're on that margin right now, unfortunately, in terms of administering the program and how to allocate some of these grant programs. That's my issue. But it's, I appreciate your point.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Holland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had mentioned before that I thought it would be a good idea if we were to identify the types of expenditures that we direct to youth services. I still think we need to get that done because that is a major concern for a lot of communities now, and especially what are we doing as a government to address the issue of youth services. And when you look at CDBG, aside from even the summer youth camp gets a big hoorah because of that, but just looking at your slides here, you have Edgemoor Community Center, Youth Services, Rose Hill Community Center, Teen Programs, Ministry of Caring, Child Care. So I think all of those things should be presented in terms of everything we do for youth, because I think there's a misconception that we don't do as much as we do. Not saying that we do more than we should or as much as we should, but the fact of the matter is I think we do a lot that's not noticed. I know even here on council, most of our grants go to youth services. So I think all these youth services that we do outside of PAL and summer youth somehow give us a sense of what we are doing to address the challenges for youth in our community.
And actually, thank you for bringing this up, Councilman Hollins. We are finalizing a report on this that I was going to present a lot of that information at my budget hearing on Monday to talk about, because I think it's important in the broad context how to understand the amount of financial support we give specific to youth services. Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Street.
I don't want to go too close to the edge here because as director of a nonprofit, I don't criticize the other nonprofit agencies, and I'm sure everybody that you have brought forward and funded does excellent work. By the same token, and maybe they didn't apply, you know, but the couple of agencies that I'm familiar with that take folks off the street every night and have waiting lists are not included, so that's just a concern. But the primary reason I raised my hand, I trust that given the amount of some of these grants, which are nice sized grants, that we're requiring audits from all of them, and all those things are, all those following.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to recognize Councilman Powers. Any further questions, Mr. Street?
No, I've gone too far already.
Okay. Any further questions from anyone else? All right, Mr.
Just
Henry?
Just one more comment. I mean,
all right.
I know it was a long presentation. It was important that you hear the scope of what these guys do on a yearly basis for these months. And I've got to commend staff again for getting this work done in a timely fashion. Thank you.
We appreciate all the hard work. Managing those panels must be take a lot of time. So thank you. Yeah. Okay. Up next, we've got our report on the PAL. Okay.
Since executing the agreement with the Police Athletic League of Delaware in December 2011, you know, I know it's been reported in the media recently. But I like to say it publicly, we are extremely pleased with the cooperative relationship with PAL that we enjoy right now. I believe both parties have worked hard together to ensure positive communication and interaction for the betterment of both organizations. I'm really pleased with the development and progress of the PAL board under the leadership of the executive director. And I think even though it's been a short time since we last met, it's really only been about 5.5 months, we're happy about the maximization in terms of time and scheduling at both facilities. Because what's kind of missed in a lot of this, unfortunately, is the kids. And the kids and the folks that are helping these neighborhoods that, but for this PAL center, putting aside what we do, they don't have access to some of these services. And PAL is doing, and continues to do, extraordinarily good job right now. And not only that, we provide our services in these facilities, our activities, our sports. And I can say on a staff level, over the last 5.5 months, the coordination, the meetings, the collaborative has been outstanding. And I have to give special recognition to Executive Director Jameson for his work during this time period. I don't have a lot to report. I think a lot of it's already been reported, to be honest with you. It has been 5.5 months. There's still work to be done, honestly. We all recognize that. But I think we're off to a great start. Jane can even attest, and Bob, I know I'll let Bob speak in a second, that the key to this is communication. And the key to this is to work out your differences, to work, you know, together jointly on these things. And at the end of the day, help the people that really need this help, and that's these kids and these services. So with that, I'd like to give Bob an opportunity if he wants to make some remarks.
Mr. Spiley, before Mr. Jameson starts, do you want to ask any questions?
Yeah, I just want to get a clarification because, you know, I read what there was in the, you know, in the paper online. Yeah. And one of the, and we all know, we supported the PAL.
Yes.
We want them to go. We want them to survive. We realize they do a lot of good work. But one of the things I kept reiterating, as was brought forward from the administration, was that some of the advanced funds that we were providing would be recouped by being offset through our fees for use of the facilities. Is that, or has that taken place?
Forgive me, Councilman.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we fronted the funds for Delmarva, the questions that were asked and what came back in the room was that we would be recovering some of those funds by being offset from our fees that for us to use the facility. That's what was committed in this room. Unless I'm,
I don't remember that.
No.
I don't
remember.
Okay, I'll be happy to go back and look because I kept asking Greg Wilson that.
Councilwoman,
but I'm probably going to be corrected.
I think, and correct me if I'm wrong,
sure,
that the feeling was that when PAL's rent was cut back, that this was like the makeup. It was from previous not paying ahead.
So it would have been offset.
It would have been already basically offset. Because think of the number of years that we went through where the rent was decreasing, the use was increasing, and this was like the gap.
Okay,
that they used for that.
And I don't dispute that. I argued from day one with Ms. Farley that there was arbitrarily cut, increases weren't
correct
given, and that we had, you know, that there were issues there. So, I mean, if that's what the formula was, that because I know I read where we retroactively played catch up.
Yeah, that was the formula.
And if that's what those funds were, mm-hmm, then we recovered that through those uses.
I just want to be next. I don't want to interfere with
you. Are you guys are done. Okay.
Yeah, if I have anything further, I'll listen to the recording.
My only comment here is that I know that we talk a lot about, you know, the fees and so forth and those kinds of things and what happened when we did decide to pay Delmarva. But I think what's kind of missing to me is that we don't talk enough about the services. We don't talk enough about what's being provided to the families and to the youth. And I think that to some extent, the media takes this as if somehow we gave PAL a grant, or we provided PAL, we you know, sort of pulled them out of some turbid condition. But the fact of the matter is, we are using the facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, there's so much good stuff that's going on that goes underreported because the focus is still on, well, are they managing okay, or, you know, what happened to the $100,000? And I just don't want that to continue to be lost in the discussion that there are some great services being provided at these facilities by PAL and as well as by Newcastle County that not only serve the kids, but families as well. So that should be part of the overall story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Powers, go ahead.
I just, with what Marcus had said, and I think there was the problem in the past administration, was no communication. And I think part of it is Powell was trying to communicate through a lot of us, but they weren't getting through to the administration. And there was a gap over how many years? Probably most of the time I've been here. So that's 5.5 years. So I agree with what Councilman Holland says. And they've done a lot of good. I think, though, you're communicating where it wasn't being communicated before.
And I think that's extremely important, is that there was years and years where there was no communication. And under your leadership, we have come to communicate much, much better. Not to say that there weren't some problems, but those, once you talked about them and understood what the root of the problem was, those got worked out. And these centers, even though both PALs were built with grant money that was given to PAL, even though they may be on leased land, the grant money was given to PAL. Those are PAL centers, just the same as the Petanero is now a Newcastle Community Center in the southern part of the county. These two PALs are Newcastle Community Centers. The signs are up. The programs are being run. It's a balance of time, and this is what they've asked for all the time, is if they cannot get the fair market rent, just as they pay to the Jewish Community Center in Brandywine and Petanero in Appaquinimic, if they can't get that fair market rent, as if they were one of those privately owned centers, then they need the county to back away their programs so that they, PAL, can rent that facility for a fair market value. So I think the communication that's gone on has brought everybody up to a level playing field.
Mr. Jameson, yes. Why don't you just come up and sit here and tell us? I mean, we're all talking around it. You're here.
Yeah, why don't you communicate?
I got my attorney with me.
And now you are in trouble.
This is Ed Pankowski. He's a treasurer for our board of directors. Secretary, I'm sorry. Yeah, don't blame me. I just want to thank everybody on council. I've been executive director since January 1st, and it's been a real challenge. I came out of retirement for this job, and I'm really enjoying it. I love working with the kids and seeing the things we're doing. All I can say about finances, we're in excellent shape. Our revenue's up. We're going to finish up July 1 with a surplus. We're going to invest that back into capital. We've got a lot of capital work we've got to do. Replace carpeting, Clearfield Park. It hasn't been replaced by like 25 years. Things like that. We're doing really good. As far as our programs, I think most of the other programs we do, our potatoes program is the kids come in after school, the districts drop the kids off, they do their homework, and once they get their homework done, they play ball or whatever the other athletics are going. Plus we have special, like at Garfield Park, we have a special room for kids that are falling behind in their grades. One-on-one, they work on these kids and their report cards go right up. It's really very successful in the education aspect. But the other thing I want you to know is that we're expanding our program. We're working on Delaware City right now with the city of Delaware City, the police department down there. There's a community center, it used to be an elementary school down there. We're getting the gym, the Phoebos is down there today working on the gym for us. So we're gonna hopefully have a program there in the fall. We're looking up Brandywine 100, first spot. I looked at Brookside, getting into the police academy over there at night, opening up for the kids in that community to play ball. County executive wanted to hold off for a couple months, but maybe in the fall. So not only are we providing the services in the Hokesson area and Garfield Park, but we're the PAL of Delaware, so we want to get out even more. And we also run a program in Smyrna, a very successful basketball program in Smyrna. So I can answer any questions. My limited knowledge, I'd be happy to.
Mr. Weiner?
Sure. Mr. Bob and Ed, thanks for coming. It's an honor for me to be able to say publicly that I'm pleased under your leadership and the current board's leadership that things have turned around, and I hope that no one will interpret any criticism they had about the financial management to be in any way directed towards a lack of care or concern about programs for kids, because that's certainly very, very important. But we do have the financial oversight as a legislative branch of government, and I think some of the issues which we raised, which of course were echoed in the press, brought about some of the change, which had gone sort of quiet without public comment anymore. And my original comment was that, you know, we do have another oversight office, and that's the office of our auditor. And, you know, we need to make sure that that our auditing department has unfettered access to the police athletic league records, because there's a big investment of tax dollars there to make sure that the progress you've made is open and transparent and available to everyone. And with that in mind, I'd like to ask the auditor, because it just is a follow-up question, so I'd asked before, Mr. Auditor, is your office being provided with a recent set of financial records from the PAL?
Bob Wasserglack, County Auditor. I have not asked for a recent set, but it's my understanding that Community Services is getting financial statements.
Yeah.
Jane and Marcus.
Okay, well, would you be willing to share that with our auditor so that he could have review
just
of that?
Clear. I mean, you know, we're tracking some of these because, you know, we're dealing with Delmarva and we with the rental payments, so
yes,
we're tracking that. Yeah, of course.
Great.
You can have anything
right if you want. Great. And follow-up, if I may continue. Follow-up question is, by the agreement between Newcastle County and our PAL, there needs to be an external audit done by June 30th of each year. Correct me if I'm wrong. Auditor Wasserbach, has there been an external audit by your office unfettered for June 30th of 2011 or for 2012? Are you working for one? And correct me if I'm wrong, because this is not my area of expertise.
Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. The external audit is by a CPA firm of the PAL's financial statements, and that's...
And have you unfettered access to that?
I'm sure I would if I... Actually, I was planning on talking to Mr. Jameson and Mr. Pankowski after the meeting and introducing myself.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't asked for anything recently.
Okay, thank you.
Because I know Marcus and his group have been doing a great job. From, so.
With Mr. Sheldon, Marcus and I, Mr. Cartier, and then Mr. Street.
Yeah, my mind's very quick. Mr. Jameson, do we still have the dances that were so popular? I know in my up in Hoke Kessington area, it was very...
Just had one last Friday.
Is that right? So we're still having that as an ongoing basis? Because
it's very seasonal. You know, in the winter, we're getting like 800 kids, up to 1,000. And one we had last Friday night, we had about 250. And it turns out there was events going on at the different schools at these
years. Okay, yes, you'll
but
see.
We are having one in Garfield Park, the first one they've had there in years, May the 11th, on Friday night.
And that seemed to be...
Yeah, the kids love it.
The kids love it. But also, it seems like it's... I don't want to say a money maker, but it does. It is, all right. I don't want to say it like that, but I know it's two and one there. I don't want to make it, you know, say that we're focusing on the money, but the kids, I know, really like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a fundraiser.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cartier and then Mr. Street.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. And I just want to, you know, my perspective in the midst of the controversy, the administration and with Marcus's leadership, the board of the PAL and the council, I think we all got together and we provided a new direction and a positive direction for the PAL. And, you know, it was driven home to me very clearly in the midst of, you know, the controversy that, you know, we, the PAL and the county are in a relationship where we provide programming to youth. And that's the focus that we should always give on in this regard. And then I guess my final comment is, if you're thinking about coming to the Brandywine 100, I'd like to sit down. I have a few ideas.
Mr. Street.
Yeah.
Well,
the so-called controversy, as far as I'm concerned, was contrived, unnecessary, politically motivated, and unfair to PAL. And let me be real clear. Nobody, not this director, not anybody on this board has asked me to say this, and I'm not speaking on their behalf. But this whole unfettered access to their books and our auditor, unless you're going to subject everybody that we fund to the same standard, then I'm going to cry foul about it. Okay? Every nonprofit that's up there now, every nonprofit we fund in other budgets, the volunteer fire companies, if we're not going to send an auditor after them, then leave Powell alone.
So, Mr. Holmes.
We have not, in the 7 years I've been here, sent our auditor after any other agency. It's fundamentally unfair. They shouldn't be held to a higher and different standard. And if you're going to hold them, whatever standard you hold them to, then you hold everybody to it or you hold nobody to it.
Mr. Holland?
Thank you. I agree with Councilman Street. I was going to let this go. I didn't want to get into another debate about this. But I do not believe that we're going to start any sort of disparate treatment toward any of our recipients. So if you're going to do it to PAL, do it to Interfaith and everybody else that's getting significant or money from the county, and we haven't done that, and there's no reason to start a new process specific for PAL. I don't agree with it. I will not support it.
I specifically asked Mr. Henry the question that I asked him about the nonprofits that listed there, and my question was, I trust that we're asking for an audit from everybody. The response was yes. Well, if that's the standard, you're required to have an external audit, a certified audit, then that's the standard. But if PAL is going to have to open its books to our auditor, then either the auditor goes in everybody's books or he goes in nobody's books.
Mr. Weiner.
Yes, I concur with both Councilman Street and Councilman Hollins, and goes back to an earlier study that council staff had done, that our auditing staff at 1.5 is way too small for a government as large as ours. We should have 3 or 4 so that we can do the kind of audits that a government and taxpayer base like this deserves. And I also wanted to add that recently at a respected educational institution of higher learning in Delaware, the auditor's report and the admissions by the new board members of total concurrence with mismanagement was used as a teaching tool by the institution to talk about how a fiduciary board should not operate. And I'm again pleased to reflect publicly that those practices are still no longer underway.
Okay. Mr. Retta?
Thank you. Like this, Bob Wasserbeck, do you do any other audits for any programs other than PAL, or have you asked for anything?
Sure. I just wanted to make clear that the only I was asked by council to review the external audit of PAL, and I did that, and I provided some observations and suggestions.
Right.
And I am being painted as the bad guy in
I'm not understanding it. I'm not painting you that.
I have nothing against PAL. I love children. PAL's a great organization. And
Bob.
I'll contribute to PAL.
Bob, I'm not.
Okay, good.
I'm a fundraiser, you know,
Bob,
passionate in the
nonprofit. Don't say that to the
Bob. So I am fed up with PAL. I don't want to hear anything more about
The only thing I'm asking you is. Any other audits within the county? That's all I've asked.
Sorry?
Any other nonprofit organization have you been asked to do any other?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was my question.
Okay.
Yes.
It's Mr. Pankowski. I'm the Secretary of PAL. I've been involved in PAL since 1988. He's a newcomer, but he's been a county policeman for quite a while, so he's been at the PAL facility and knows the program. Councilman Weiner, once we left here in November, there was a reawakening of PAL. There were 6 dedicated people that wanted it to survive. A lot of the dead weight was thrown out, and a lot of new good weight came on board. We're going to have a fully staffed board of 20 people at our next meeting, May 14th. We have committees that basically a year or 2 years ago had nothing to report. Now we have people fighting to be committee chairs. It's a great pleasure to have. And the audit and and our resolution with County Council last November about the funding, that was a great awakening to PAL. We have a lot of dedicated people who want to move forward. We're bringing back a lot of fundraisers we had 5-6 years ago. If you ever played in the PAL golf tournament, we made a ton of money there. We have the dances are great events. We're going to have a race in November. And we have new people coming on board that are going to go to corporations and say, here's PAL, would you donate or grant us some money from your funding? And we're not going to rely upon this one funding source we had that took a percentage of the gate, which helped very little. So we got our financial structure in order. We got dedicated people that are going to be on board long term, and they're going to be elected for 2-year terms starting Monday, May 14th. So I was on the verge of throwing in the towel myself back in December, but what happened was 6 people got dedicated. We met 2 or 3 times a week and got things back on track. So it's a great organization. All during this period of time, though, nothing suffered as far as the programs and the kids. It was a problem with the chairman, the former executive director, the liaison with the board of directors and all that. So things are running a lot better than I thought.
Thank you, Ed.
Yep. Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I'm not going to debate the issue. I'm not second-guessing you. This is my feelings. I realize there have been some change, but I know some of those people, and I have to tell you, my feeling is nothing to take away from the dedicated people that are there now, but there were dedicated people there before, too. But they got caught up in diminishing revenues, increased costs, and quite honestly, a county government that turned a blind eye and a closed checkbook.
Yep.
And that's what, and it's a shame that some really good people got caught up in it and had their reputations besmirched in the press and other places. And for that, though I didn't do it, I apologize to them, though they're not here on behalf of this county government, because without them, you wouldn't have had anything to keep going. So I appreciate everything you've done, appreciate everything you will do, but there were some real good people in the past as well.
I think I hinted on that by saying...
No, I understand. No, I just...
Continue.
Nope, I understand it. I understand it.
Mr. Wasserback, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that for anybody to imply that anything I do is for political purposes, it's just emphatically no. I mean, I'm emphatic about that. That's an attack on my character and professionalism, and it's absolutely not true. I'll swear on my mother's and father's grave on that.
Mr. Jameson?
Thank you. As Ed said, I was a Newcastle County police officer, 23 years, retired as a captain. I was always active and still am. I'm the lobbyist for Fraternal Order of Police. And I can remember back in the 1980s, we had a building over on 13. It's called the Mickwedale Home for the H. Remember that? The FOP bought it, turned to be the biggest boondoggle we ever got. It's costing us a fortune. So we turned around and we sold it at $50,000 profit. And what we did with that $50,000 was we donated it to a newly formed PAL of Delaware organization. So we helped start, the cops of Newcastle County helped start this organization. And one of the things I've done since I've been back in there, I've met with the chief several times. He's going to start sending a liaison representative to every meeting and try to reinforce that relationship, because we wouldn't exist if the police department didn't want us to exist. You have to have a police department that's your main sponsor. Now we work, county's our main sponsor, but we work with the other police agencies too. Smyrna, Delaware City, State Police. But it's a joint effort because we want the kids to work with the cops. That's our motto. We kind of modified it. It's cops and kids fit together. We want to get these kids fit physically, fit in their education, and fit in their role models where they're ready to go out and be successful in whatever profession they choose. That's what we want to do. I just want to make sure everybody, because we kind of forget about the police aspect of the organization, but that's the genesis of it. Otherwise, we're just another Boys and Girls Club.
Yep.
But we're not. It's police officers, retired officers, volunteers working with these kids.
Well, thank you for coming today. I think everybody appreciates the update. Councilman Street?
Well, I think that ending on a positive note is the best way to end, and I would just encourage you to do everything you can to strengthen the police involvement with the program. I mean, I think that the PAL's mission in terms of positive interaction between community youth and police officers, it's you know, to what I was taught at the beginning of my career, when I frankly didn't know anything about a PAL. As a matter of fact, my mentor told me I had to work with the police if I wanted to work with kids, and I told him I wasn't going to do it. He told me I was going to be fired if I didn't, and I learned a lot from that, and I haven't forgotten it, and it's been helpful to me and my work with kids, and it's a win-win kind of situation. So anything that can be done to strengthen that and to involve more police officers, I think would just be an asset to the program.
Thank you.
Mr. Tackett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, I apologize for not being here. I had several constituent issues that I had to address in a meeting with the Delaware Hospice. I couldn't get them out of the room. But I did read the article in the paper today. You know, obviously, I do want to commend PAL. PAL does a wonderful job, you know, with our youth. You know, we learned a long time ago that we have to occupy the minds of the youth, because if they find things to do themselves, we're probably not going to be happy with what they're choosing. So we've got to get out there. It's well worth the dollars. It's certainly an investment in their future. Quickly, you know, I walked on the end of something. You know, we've all been, you know, passionate about this. Each council member has had conversations and public comments that we've all made on this. You know, like I said, I was extremely, and that was my first update on this. You know, perhaps I missed it, but the newspaper article today, a lot of changes have been made. It looks like a direction has been, you know, you've turned in a direction over there that's very positive. You know, it's going to allow you to do even more wonderful things than you've already done. And again, you know, each of us, you know, have had our comments and all, but I attribute a lot that has happened and went on to what this auditor has done over here and the audit that he did and brought here and was made public, because I'm not sure if a lot of the changes that happened would have happened. You know, these are just my comments, but when that auditor goes out there and does an audit and he brings it back here and presents it to us, that's the type of information I'm looking for. We could all be looking for different things, and we'll all make different comments, but I think, you know, when we're out here and we're the shepherds of the taxpayer dollars, this man goes out and does his department and brings us back something, that's what I want to see. That gives us the basis for what we're looking for, what changes are going to need to be made, and it's a venture that we're going to continue to be in. And, you know, obviously seven people are going to, you know, agree or disagree, and that'll change our vision. But where it's at and what was brought and what we've seen, I was extremely happy with it myself.
Thank you for your work. We look forward to more good reports. We're excited, and I'm in the 5th District, Brookside, Kimberton. We're going to talk. So
that's why I mentioned it.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Folks, thanks for coming. Is there anything under other? Mr. Henry. Nothing.
Just real quick, the Delaware Department of Labor is expected to allocate, as we understand, roughly $525,000 in support for the Summer Youth Employment Program statewide this year. My department's in the process of applying for funding in support of our Summer Youth Employment Program. We do expect, as previous years, to be very competitive. We do now have applications available and a prepared package made for each council member. If you need additional applications, please don't hesitate to contact my office. Also, we'll be holding an application processing event on Saturday, May 19, 2012, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Union Building Multipurpose Room for youth and their parents or guardians. Staff from both community services and human resources will be on hand to assist on-site with the application process, income eligibility, and interviewing. And I'll continue to keep council updated, hopefully when we hear from the Department of Labor on how much we actually get awarded. And this is information that's packed as well.
Mr. Henry, may I just ask, could you guys put together a flyer, a simple flyer on that May 19th event so that... Oh, great. Okay. You're on top of this. Okay. Mr. Kovac and then Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To add to that electronically so we can...
Sure. Yes,
sir. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Mr. Tackett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Marcus, how has those dollars this year looked like from past years? Is that pretty...
Motion for adjournment.
$525 is not what we've been allocated in the past, and we haven't applied for.
Okay. I'm still looking for some money.
I would respectfully suggest that it would behoove us as council members to make contact with state officials and urge that our application be supported, because it's competitive, it's open, and it's political. We need to weigh in on this if we want to receive some of the funds.
Good advice.
It can't be just left, to the department head and the executive. We don't say we don't want, if we don't speak up and say we want it, then folks are going to make certain assumptions. On the other hand, if we speak up and say we want it, and we are representative of our areas, and I think it will have an impact.
Well, and plus the fact, you know, we've been talking about youth services. This really is another piece of that that we can offer to kids in our districts. And so that's good advice. We need to make our voice heard with the state reps and senators regarding this funding. So thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for the update.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any public comment? Like Mr. Smiley, going once.
Motion. Oh.
Going twice.
Go ahead.
Going three times. Motion.
To adjourn.
Second.
Do you have second?